Welcome to the Hawk Talk Podcast on the QU Media Podcast Network. I'm your host, Parker Limonstall, and I'm joined today by...
I'm Caleb Krager.
I'm Wes Sheeler.
I'm Joe Del Rosario.
And today we got some exciting sports news for our past results from this past weekend and for upcoming sporting events here at the on the QU's campus. So boys, we want to start off with some men's volleyball.
Yes, indeed. Hawks had an interesting start early this February. On February 2nd, they went up against the Queen's University of Charlotte, the Royals. First game went into five sets, 2-2, as it were. And then, of course, the Royals took away the fifth set, so 3-2. But February 3rd, they went up against the Royals again. And again, it stretched into a fifth set, and they took that away. The Hawks finally took that one away. Yes, they started to pick it up really quick by the third set. We get into the service aces by Rajay Aline. He also provided 22 kills, 4 aces, and 1 block. And following after that, Zachary Jurjeski provided 9 kills, and A.J. Goodhier provided 8 kills with 3 blocks, as well as Ramon Daricare provided 5 kills and 3 blocks.
Yeah, I'll definitely tell you, because I was at that game with one of my friends. The atmosphere for both game days was just really electric. I mean, the games just kept going back and forth. Like, it just felt like, especially in the fifth set of the second game, I think they were like trading points off left, right, and center. Like, it was 1-0, 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, back and forth. I think until like, it was like 8-8, and then that's when the Hawks really took over at the end of the second game. So, I mean, yeah, they were both really exciting games, and I was actually really happy to see the Hawks get their win back kind of in a way. And they're going to need all that momentum, because they are going to get, they're getting ready to go to their two-game away set against Ohio State. So, I mean, they're going to need that momentum as soon as humanly possible.
Yeah. The back and forth point, that was very tense. For sure. And man, the fans, oh, they really added to the atmosphere too. Shouting, cheering, really, really cheering on their team there.
Oh yeah, the football team. Now, I'll tell you, because I was the cheer coach was talking to me before the game, and she had like these pom-poms and that they had left over from the basketball game. She's like, just please hand these out, kind of thing. And I just went out around to our football team, and that was just sitting in our student section, and I was just like, okay, can you guys please take these? And I will say our football team is definitely very energetic, and it was nice to see a lot of our athletes out there just supporting each other. So that was actually really cool to see.
I was a little worried for us the first night there.
Yeah, but I mean, at least it's good to see the progression of the guys, because like, we're really starting to see what Coach Kebner has built kind of come to fruition. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cool to kind of see that developing of this program going forward, and we're definitely really excited to see what this team's got for the MEVA conference coming up.
Mm-hmm. And the Hawks are set to go up against the McKendree University on February 8th.
Yes, as of the date of this recording. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's going to depend on when this comes out, but yep, they definitely are, and I will be on color analyst for that game.
Hey, I'm going to be PA for that game.
Whoop, whoop. So, we got any other news that came from the sporting world of QU today?
Yeah, for both women's and tennis, men's and women's tennis, the recent GLVC preseason poll, the league's coaches voted both their men's and women's teams to finish in fourth position in the West Division, with the top four from both teams qualifying for the conference tournament. For the women's team, this fall they took out two of the three matches over Western Illinois and Missouri Valley with a narrow defeat to Newman. They had a semi-final finish at the Midwest Region ITA in September. They also had wins in all doubles matches outside of the tournament play in the fall. The pairing of Blanca Salas Cruz and Mahi Panchal carried a number 5 region ranking into the season. They'll no doubt have their February 18th matchup against Maryville as another opportunity at the Saints doubles pairing against Gunlusen and Velasquez, who gave Panchal and Salas their only loss of the fall in the ITA semifinal. And over to the men's season. Uh, They had a win over Missouri Valley with losses to Newman and St. Louis. Inigo Villacampa is in the 16th spot in the region in singles competition. He's a freshman who won all of his matches aside from one outside of the tournament play, as well as a round of 16 exit in the A draw of the Midwest Regional ITA in October. Villacampa fell to the eventual tournament champion, Ruben Fonga of Tiffin University. The team start the spring season off against Missouri Baptist University in St. Louis on February 16th, a match they won 4-3 a year ago. The Hawks will also face conference foe McKendree University for the first time in 3 years. The head coach, Ethan Arms, is optimistic and excited about the spring season, saying, "Coming off our best fall season since I started coaching at KU, I have high expectations for this spring." He says he likes that what he's seeing out of his teams and so far, and that the first 2 weekends will be a great test to see where we are and see how we move forward.
That's cool to see. Now I'm going to ask, have any of you guys been able to make it out for one of our tennis meets?
Nope.
I have not.
I haven't.
So from the times I've been able to go, they play at, I forget the name of the park, right down on Chestnut. So not too far of a drive from at least my dorm building of Heline Hall. It's just a much more personal atmosphere for an event. Like, we're very much used to like how basketball, baseball, football, even volleyball, like they're just this huge amount of fans just going rah 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 in these big stadiums. But with tennis, it's at least here at our school, it tends to be a lot more personal. Like, you tend to see a lot more of the family there for the teams, and because it's in a park area, you tend to see a lot more of the community coming around. So it's actually really nice to kind of see that little more personal feel, more small-time feel with tennis, to just kind of have that personal connection to the players. So it's definitely something I would recommend anyone to go out to when our teams, both men and women, have their local home games. Please recommend going out to them, because they are really an interesting experience to have.
I mean, tennis can be fun, too. Don't underestimate it, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I learned the hard way when my friends in high school tried to talk me into playing in high school, that it's not something that – it's a fun time, but you better know how to play if you're going to play with some people that have experience in it. How about you guys? Have any of you guys ever played it by chance?
Yeah, I played sophomore through senior year of high school. And, I mean, I wasn't the best player, but – it was a fun experience.
I played it on the DS.
On the DS. Oh, well, speaking on tennis with Nintendo products, I mean, shout out to all of those who played Wii Sports when they were little kids on the Nintendo Wii. Let's be honest here. I mean, bowling was probably the big thing with that game, but let's face it, all of us played tennis at least once on that. What was your guys' technique with the whole Nintendo Wii Sports?
Got to go to the corner, right, when you're serving? Got to go straight corner.
Yeah, I kept curving, so I had to readjust for the curve.
I'm just swinging my hand. I don't know.
I'm about to say, that's how I was like, Joe. I mean, I'm telling you, I was just that kid that would just swing the Wii remote around, just hope that I hit it. And whether it worked or not, I just always had a fun time with it. So, and obviously, you can't just swing your arm like no tomorrow with actual tennis. It's a lot more precise than that you can probably testify to that, Joe.
Yeah, I can.
But it's definitely a fun experience that I would recommend anyone to do while they have the opportunity. Do it while you're young. Don't wait till the last minute. Do it while you're young. Do it while you're in college. And with that, I think it's about time to move on to our next sport of the day. We're going to talk about some basketball.
Got
to
talk about the men's basketball. Coming off of this past Saturday, February 3rd, a real heartbreaking loss, double overtime. Your Hawks lost 72-74. But, I mean, there's definitely still takeaways from that game. There's bright sides. You're looking at a team that showed a lot of heart, a lot of fight going into double overtime. And a team that, I mean, they've went since December 9th to January 11th. They had a 5-1 record, and then January 13th till that past game, they have a 1-5 record. So a lot of ups and downs for this team, but it's definitely a bright side to show how hard they fought in that game.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially with this the latest men's basketball game when they played William Jewell and they kept going into overtime. Like, William Jewell is one of the best teams in the conference. I forget the exact placing they are. I think at the time of this recording, they're either in anywhere from second to fourth place in the conference. I forget exactly where the exact point. But, I mean, it's definitely good to see them in that competition with that high of level of a team. So it's really cool to see that. But, I mean, that up and down thing you're talking about, that's really crucial because we're at the very end of the season. We're in that home stretch area, and
I think there's 7 games remaining left in the season.
Indeed, I think you are correct on that, at least as of the time of this recording kind of thing. But the thing I've noticed about our men's basketball team is it's very interesting to see, because they are one of the better rebounding teams in the GLVC.
Absolutely. I mean, I even have here in front of me, we're actually out-rebounding our opponents. We go up and grab about 39 rebounds per game to our opponents, almost 35. So, I mean, we're getting almost 5 more rebounds per game than our opposing teams, which definitely is an advantage.
Absolutely, and I just mean, it's one of those frustrating things that you just, as a fan that you watch, to see that we're close. Like, we have that ability to be good, and it's right there, and we just want to grab it. But I will say this, Caleb, is there anything that you have noticed from any games that you've gone to about the team that, like, stands out to you?
I was especially going to point out the rebounding. The rebounding seemed a lot. I mean, just to me, one thing that I saw while I would be watching is just three-point shooting in general. I feel like our three-point shooting, I feel like I wouldn't say it's not as confident, but I feel we're just shooting a lower percentage than opposing teams. We're just not. I feel like we need to, if we're going to take those shots, we need to take them with pure confidence, and they're going to start falling.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. But, I mean, if I remember right, in the GLVC, we are the second from the bottom in three-point accuracy, I think.
We are. We are shooting, as a team, almost 32% from three. And on defense, we're normally allowing about 36% three-point shooting.
So it seems like, from what you're describing, Caleb, that it's the three-point game that's really, really hampering the Hawks this year, preventing them from taking that next step.
That, and I do want to point out that I think that the turnover ratio, I think if we can just take care of the ball, we can, a few shots are going to start falling more. We average a little over more than half a turnover per game than opposing teams. So, like, I feel like if we as a team, we can take care of the ball more, calm down on offense, and then go back on defense, make sure everybody's back, get set. Don't allow too many fast break points. Don't allow too many quick three-pointers, that we can really see a different team the rest of the season, and we can really become a scary team that people don't want to face.
Oh, absolutely. And kind of talking about the turnovers, I mean, any sport, turnover ratio is a big thing. We see it in sports, not just basketball, but like football. When you watch the NFL or college mm-hmm. football, the teams that usually have the better turnover ratios tend to be a lot more successful than the ones who have more in the negative area, because obviously if you give up the ball more, you give the other team more chances to put points up. And I don't care who you are. If you give someone an opportunity to win the game, it doesn't matter who they are, they are going to go win the game eventually if you keep messing up like that.
Absolutely.
Preach, brother.
What about your intake on all this, Wes?
That's about it.
That's about it. I mean, I did want to shout out a couple guys. I mean, things I specifically noticed were, I mean, Zion Richardson having a great year. He's averaging about 17 points per game and 7.2 rebounds per game, which actually leads the team in both stats, which, I mean, he's just having a phenomenal year.
Oh, yeah, it's like Zion is definitely, I will definitely agree with that Zion has taken a huge step forward to be the leader that the team's needed. But just like with any sport, you can't always just rely on the one guy. I mean, I think Nate Shockey's had a good little season while he's been at it too.
Yeah, he's actually going back to the three-point shooting. I mean, he could be a big part of that. He's currently shooting 39% from three and leading the team in steals with 1.6 steals per game. So he could be huge both on offense and the defensive end. We just need to get in a rhythm. A rhythm is huge. I mean, on that 5-1 stretch, we were doing a lot of great things, and then we kind of like dipped a little bit, 1-5 recently. So like, if we can get on a rhythm these last seven games, we can be a very, very dangerous team.
And I think you make up a good point about that, Caleb, about being a very dangerous team, because I'm a football fan, so I'm going to throw a little football analogy in there. Like, the most dangerous teams that I always see going into any sport in the playoffs, whether it be baseball, basketball, football, volleyball, is the team that gets hot at the end. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen so many teams, especially being a Packers fan, God help my soul, that the team that is the hottest going into the postseason will always beat the team that comes in, whether they're the number one seed, two, three, whatever you have it. If that team comes in cold and they play a team that's, even though they're ranked lower than them, if that team comes in hot, look out, because upsets happen. Again, my Packers, we did that to the Cowboys this year. So
absolutely. And I mean, to go hand in hand with that, if we want to stick with the football topic, I'm actually a big Eagles fan. So the exact opposite. I mean, a team that starts 10-1 looks dominant, and then you go, I think it was 1-5 or something, close to that in the last like six games, and then you walk into the playoffs in the wild card and you get beat by Baker Mayfield and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So it is very much that story. If you go in cold, it's hard to turn that around. So it doesn't matter how good you were in the first half. If you can be dangerous and you can be locked in the second half, it's a very scary thought for other teams.
And now, Caleb, have you got any other stuff to talk about with us with the basketball team kind of going on as of late?
Not a whole lot. Looking at a 10-11 current record, 5-8 conference record, just really wanting to see what this team has. You know what I mean? The rest of the year, just looking to see if they can make this turnaround and really start fighting. They showed a lot of that in the double overtime game. That's why I was even in a loss, really pleased with that. But yeah, just hoping and really, really looking at what this team can do.
Absolutely. Wes, Joe, you guys got anything to say on that?
I do not.
Neither do I.
All right. And with that, we're going to move to my section of the show, which I'm sure everyone's been waiting for. Exactly. It's time for that baseball preview. Baseball season is coming back to QU this year, and it's definitely going to be a little interesting to kind of see. It's a season of unknowns, if we want to say that, because the big story of the year is how many departures that we've had from the Quincy baseball team, because I kind of got a list out here right in front of me. Some big names that have departed, whether it be for transfer or graduation, is our shortstop, Gino D'Alessio, who led the team with a 393 average. He ended up actually transferring to a D1 college, Abilene Christian. We wish Gino the best of luck there. Hope he succeeds. But we also have lost our star catcher, Luke Napleton, who was the not just single season home run leader, but career home run leader here at QU. He transferred to the University of Louisville. Yeah, that Louisville, everyone knows, the Cardinals. So again, congratulations to Luke on all the success, and we wish him the best of luck. But we also have guys who have transferred to other D2 schools like Logan Voth and Carter Endish. Both of them play major roles, especially Voth when it comes to playing as a utility player, Endish in the back end of the bullpen. So They're definitely sorely going to be missed. But we've also got people, like I said, who graduated. We have our ace, Spencer Walker. He's now graduated. Jay Hamill, the legend himself, has graduated. And then we also have Lance Logsdon, who was the previous career home run record before Napleton went and decided to take that record for himself. He's graduated. So with just all this overturn, this roster with key players, it's just going to be a huge thing to see, like, Are these guys going to step up that are coming to take that spot? I mean, even with that, even with the massive overturn, the GLVC still in their preseason rankings has Quincy favored to win the GLVC. They have them currently placed in first place. So, I mean, the GLVC's committee has a lot of confidence in Quincy to finish at the top. But even with these massive departures, we do have a major addition from a D1 transfer. He is going right now, from the looks of things, he's going to be the fourth pitcher in the rotation. It is Cade Ruffner, transfer from Division I Purdue University. So if you're a Boilermaker fan, you may have seen him once or twice, but he is a redshirt freshman, so it will be interesting to kind of see how he comes into his own this season as that fourth guy in the rotation to kind of help make up for the loss of Walker and Hamill. And I will say I do have a bit of an inside information when it comes to the baseball team. So do you guys have anything, though, before I go into that? Do you guys have any, like, notes you want to talk about with baseball as of late?
I mean, I think it could be a really, really exciting year for baseball. I mean, obviously, we're coming off of a high that was last year, a really good season. And I mean, even with so many losses, I mean, you've got a fan base that wants to see, I mean, that level of baseball again. So you've got a lot of, like, expectations to hold up, and you've got a lot of new players that want to prove themselves and prove that they can do what those guys did. New guys that want to prove, like, that they have what it takes. So you've got, I think, a really exciting season overall for both players and the fans.
Please continue.
All right, I gladly will, Wes. But yeah, you were kind of talking about, like, last year's success. Like, last year, it just seemed like it was the year of destiny for the Hawks. Now, obviously, they did end up losing in the Super Regional to their GLVC rival, the University of Indianapolis Greyhounds. So, it unfortunately was one of those things that was just short of the goal, but I mean, you still can't take away, they won the GLVC conference tournament, and then they went to the Midwest Regional and just dominated everybody. So, I mean, that team is continuing to still be successful. It's just like, as a Packers fan, can they finally just break through that glass ceiling and just get to that next stage? And that's going to be very interesting to see if this new crop of guys that are going to be taking over the starting roles can fill that. And finally, if and you're a wrestling fan, you know what this is, finish the story. But in other notes, so I'm going to give you guys a bit of an outlook of the roster from my inside information, who I will leave anonymous, just for any journalism integrity. Let's just go with that. So, obviously, like I said, big story. Who's going to replace Luke Napleton at the catcher position? As of right now, it looks like Dustin DuPont, the man who played very often at third base last year, and sometimes even in left field if they needed to, is going to be taking over the full-time starting role at catcher. Now, he did play a little in catching. He was the number two guy last year. That's why they threw him a lot more at third base and left field, but he does really have the ability to be that number one catcher, and I can definitely tell from just how all the guys have talked about him over the last year on the baseball team that they see a lot in Dustin, and I think that's going to be a really big point to the season, is just can he replicate or at least get close to the production that Luke Napleton had as an All-American. So, I mean, I definitely am looking forward to seeing Dusty take over that. And then also it looks like the second catcher, kind of a bit up in the air, but it looks like, I think it's Connor Simmons. I forget how the exact way to say it. But it looks like he is going to be taking over the role of the second catcher on the days that Dustin does not catch. But it looks like for the first set, they're going to have Dustin take either two games of the three-game sets or three games of the four-game sets so far. That seems like kind of how they're doing it right now while they figure out the official number two, but it looks like Connor is going to walk away with the number two spot. But again, things can change. These next few conference series are going to be crucial for them. First base is going to be taken over by Austin Simpson, the man who was pretty much the DH all last year, who I pretty much broke the microphone on commentary when he hit his walk-off home run. I forget what game it was, but I do remember that he did hit one. That was the first game I was on commentary, and I apologize to any viewers who ended up having to listen to me during that game because I ended up losing my mind a bit about it. So unfortunate for that, but Simpson's projected to take first. Second base is a little more up in the air, and this is where their first three-game series against the University of North Georgia kind of comes into play, where they're going to have to determine who's that second base guy, along with third base. Third base is also in the air, and that's because they're a three-way race for both second and third. The guys, according to my source, that are in the contention for second base are J.D. Ortiz, who was the transfer from Southern Illinois University from last year, and then also David Brogdon and Evan Davis. They are right now projected to be in a three-way race for that second base spot. Third base, it's Brogdon and Davis as well, but they're joined by Charlie Allison in that race. So it's very interesting to see how those two races are really going to be determined by this first series that they have, along with the extra game they have on that Tuesday against Valdosta State University. And then as of for the shortstop, it seems is all but written to be Joe Huffman. Joe Huffman played a lot at third last year, but it looks like the coaching staff is really high on him, and they think that he can replicate not just the offensive but the defensive production of Gino D'Alessio as well. So I think it's a huge honor for Joe to be given that seal of approval, along with Dustin Dupont at catcher, to have that seal of approval, like, hey, we have the confidence in you to take over for someone that was so vital to our program's success. But at the same time, I'm going to mention to you guys the outfielders. Now, the outfielders, there are four designated guys that look like it's kind of going to be like I don't want to say round robin, but kind of a rotating set of starters, as I'm going to say. And from what I remember, the guys are Adam Lewis. Brock Boynton is the only one that probably won't rotate out. He's pretty much the guy at center field, and with that kind of speed, that's what you want from your center fielder. Like, the guy just he's very fast. I don't remember his exact stolen base numbers, but I just remember just every time man would get either a single or a walk, like, we were looking for him to maybe take that steal at second. And more often times than not, he wouldn't end up taking it. I do know he was our leader in steals last year. I just forgot the exact number. So bear with me on that. And then we've also got people like Jake Vitale, who's a transfer. He's going to be taking off a lot of our starting time. And also Ben Dolliff is going to be taking starting time as well. Now, people may be wondering about Cole Erickson. He was a left fielder last year a lot. This year, it looks like they're going to throw him more into a utility role, maybe more in like the DH role, because they have him listed as a catcher / outfielder on their roster. And it looks like he may be playing number three as a catcher, kind of just in case something were to happen to whether it be Dusty or Connor or whoever they decide to go number two, kind of like that emergency kind of thing, like, hey, we can get this guy out there and he'll be successful. And then for outfield, because he has experience in the outfield. So it's kind of nice to kind of see the roster coming together. So you guys ain't got anything to say on that?
I do not.
And then the last point I'm going to talk about is our starting rotation. For those who watched us last year, you may remember Griffin Kern, or as I like to call him, Kern on the Cob. Yes, that was my nickname for him, so bear with me on my bad jokes, but he's right now projected to be the quote-unquote ace or the pitcher for opening day. So that is cool to see that Griffin is going to go from the number two to the number one this year, at least in terms of where he is in the rotation. Number two is going to be Kobe Essien. So people may also remember that one. He was, I think, if I remember right, he was in the four spot a lot last year. And he was always a very solid pitcher, to where he would shut down those teams. Just in, like, before the game even began, you would know Essien was going to strike a lot of guys out. But the problem is it tended, like, the pitch count might get a little high, so they might have to pull him out sooner than they would have someone like Spencer Walker or Jay Hamill, that tends to be a little more of a ground ball specialist. But I don't diss on that with the strikeout count when it came to those guys, because they could also strike out. But also, the third one was the man who was a freshman last year and has some really nice off-speed work, is Aaron Smith. He will be taking the three spot as of right now, and that's due to the aforementioned Cade Ruffner, who's going to be projected the number four. Allegedly, from what my source said, he might have like a minor injury. So because of Smith's experience last year, I think he had four starts last year, they're going to give him the nod for the opening series. But it looks like the Valdosta State game will be Cade's game, at least as of right now, from what my source said. So it is really cool to kind of see everything coming together. And then it looks like they're going to go with a closer by committee right now, with the current closer, Brett Panic, who will be taking over the main closing role when he's healthy after Chase, I think it's Gockel. I always used to call him Glockel for the speed he had behind his fastballs. It looks like Brett Panic is going to take up the main closing role once he comes back. But until that point, it looks like it's going to be kind of a closer by committee. So it is really kind of cool to see everything coming together with them. And then kind of mentioned a bit about the game. So the first four series is the Hawks will be playing are all non-conference. They're three games at the University of North Georgia. Then they have one game at the University of Valdosta State, three games at Columbus State, and then they come home for their home opener for a four-game series against the Davenport Panthers, who are an affiliate, not in baseball, but are an affiliate to the GLVC in some other sports. So a little rivalry there in some other sports. So it'll be cool to kind of watch that, and I will be on the call for a few of those games. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited for some baseball.
I mean, I'm excited to just, like you said, there's so many new guys. There's so many positions that they're going to kind of like rotate and see who eventually fits where and who eventually they want to be that guy. So, I mean, it is going to be an exciting season. I think it's going to be interesting to see where they place guys and where guys show out and show what they can do and see if we can, I mean, make it to where even do better than we did last year.
And I couldn't agree more, Caleb. And I know some of us here are a little more ingrained in the Quincy community, and on the topic of baseball, we have to talk about the unfortunate news that was given last year, especially towards the end, that the Quincy Gems will not be returning to the Prospect League this upcoming season. Are you guys familiar with the Quincy Gems and the Prospect League?
I heard the news when it happened, but I'm not super familiar with the league itself.
So for those who are unaware, and this is my cup of tea, so bear with me. I might go off on a little more of a tangent about baseball. But the Prospect League is a collegiate summer baseball league where kids that still have NCAA eligibility can come and play in the summer for a team, not getting paid. That way they can keep their NCAA eligibility, because once you get paid, especially when it comes to baseball, that tends to get rid of your eligibility, and that's a headache. So with that league, we do have people that do come from all over different universities that come play for these teams. Now, I do want to give a shout out to two of our guys on our JV baseball team, Bryce Hires and Matthew Brummer, because they have signed in the Prospect League. They've signed with the Springfield Lucky Horseshoes. Yes, that's a name. That's an actual team name, Lucky Horseshoes. It's a reference to the sandwich, so don't ask me. I'm not the one who decided that was a good idea. But it is a really cool league to watch. I've been to several games both here in Quincy and also in Norman, Illinois for the Norman Corn Belters. Again, did not come up with these names. They're just what I know. And we've had players who have played in those leagues come here from Quincy for years. So it's definitely taking a lot more precedent on the QU baseball team now that the Gems are gone. Like, this is Quincy's team now. There's no summer ball team anymore. Q Stadium is the Hawks Stadium, and that is where the city is going to come watch their baseball team play. But I do want to say, like, it was really fun being at those Gems games from the times that I was able to be there. Again, I'm someone who likes a lot more personal stuff to their sports. I like the smaller ballparks, smaller stadiums, because you feel a lot more attached to the players on the field. So I'm that guy who doesn't go to a lot of major league games. I'm that guy who goes to your minor league games like Kane County Cougars or Quincy Gems or something like that. So if you hear a little bias from me when it comes to that, don't be surprised. But that league also does contain a few former minor league ball clubs, the Clinton Lumber Kings and Burlington Bees, chief among them. So if you're ever curious, if any of our baseball players ever want to go and play summer ball and you want to play for a former professional team, go to one of those two, along with teams like Normal Corn Belters, who used to be in the Frontier League, Chili Chote Paints in the Frontier League, and then also cities that used to have professional baseball teams like Marion, Illinois, who have the Thrillville Thrillabillies, and Jackson, Tennessee, who have the Jackson Rockabillies. So, I mean, it is a league that is definitely growing, and it's really cool to kind of see like guys from the university go and play in that league, because I think that's a league that can really get them attention for their pro years and also prepare them for seasons upcoming, especially like, hey, if you're in the JV team, this is a really good opportunity. So I would highly encourage our guys on the JV team to look at some summer leagues to play.
And I mean, even like you pointed out too, like stories, it seems like a stories form in itself. I mean, with the season that we had last year. And then, I mean, I know the gyms don't have anything to do with the Hawks, but they leave, and now you've got, like, a new group of guys that can come in and prove that this is their stadium. This is where they play ball and prove what they can do. You know what I mean? It's like it's almost like they're writing a little book out there.
The story has to write itself at this point, pretty much. But speaking, I kind of want to get on a little fun thing here before we wrap up about some just wacky names that you just know from sport teams. I don't know if how many of you guys have that kind of expansive knowledge, but I think it'd be fun to just kind of find some just random sport team names that you can just come up and just talk about. So if you guys, I'll give you guys a couple minutes just to find some names, and the minute you come up with one, because I think I've done plenty. I want to give you guys some space to see kind of what I see on a day-to-day basis when it comes to sports.
I know you've got a list, right, Parker? So if you want to... You want to kick us off?
Well, I'm going to start off with, obviously, the league I was talking about, the Prospect League. Corn Belters. Let's just face it, everybody. I mean, who would think that you would name a baseball team Corn Belters? Like, it's not a name that I would think. And I've heard, and I have a T-shirt back in my dorm room that with their logo and all that. Everyone's just like, that is one of the most out there names I've ever heard. And my response is to this. Simply put, have you seen Illinois? See how many cornfields we have around here? I mean, like it or not, it's an appropriate name for a team that's played in Illinois. I mean, because they play in Normal, Illinois. And honestly, between the drives, between from the stadium to the, usually Springfield, it's like barren wasteland of just cornfields. So it's an appropriate name, to say the least. But I will say a cool experience I had at that stadium was that they actually grow corn out in the stands. They plant it first before the season begins, and then as the season goes, it starts to grow. So it's actually really cool to see. I would recommend that anyone who can make it out to Normal or lives near Normal, go to a game. Absolutely go to a game, please.
I mean, a couple funny ones. I don't want to go too far down, but they definitely have significance to the city that they're in or where they're at, but a couple of them just sound funny. Like, if you go to college basketball, you're like the North Carolina Tar Heels. You hear that and you're like, well, what's a Tar Heel? You know what I mean? So, like, a couple of them, or my favorite one, nobody can lie. When you're thinking NBA and somebody says the Denver Nuggets, you thought of chicken nuggets first. Don't lie. You did.
I can't lie. I thought that was what they were when I first started watching basketball.
See, it's everybody does. Everybody does. It definitely, like, they do have significance. It's not like they're not called the chicken nuggets, but overall, you know.
Wes, you got anything for us over here?
Well, from Stetson University, about 35 miles northeast of Orlando, Florida, they have the Stetson Hatters. And then they have Unicorns of New Braunfels, Texas.
That's really intimidating, you know what I mean? Really.
We also have Preparatory Eaglets and the Rockhurst Hawklets of Michigan and Missouri.
Did I hear that right, Wes? Yes. Did I hear that right? Well, you said eaglets.
Eaglets. That's That's how it's spelled.
Man, I mean, we see team names all the time where it's like, okay, like Bearcats or Hawks, like, oh, that's just another team name. Mm-hmm. But then you hear Eaglets. I'm fascinated.
I just want to know the process of coming up with that.
Well, from at least my perspective of when, especially with baseball teams, they do it, they usually like send out like a survey on their X account, Twitter, let's be honest here, it's still Twitter. And they come out there and they say, fans, give us names and we will choose the best ones. And it's usually kind of like, okay, we choose the best names, and then they usually will take it to a committee to determine what name is the best. That's usually how it goes, at least in things like the Prospect League. And I know the NFL did it. I still remember when Washington was changing their name, there was names like the Commanders, Red Wolves, among others. So, like, it's usually a committee that ends up determining the name from the finalists. And unfortunately, for most teams, it ends up being the generic name, but sometimes it slips through the crack.
We also have the Zips.
Oh, of Akron?
Yep, of Akron. And we also have Deaf Leopards.
Leopards that can't hear?
Yes.
I was about to say, it makes me think of some music with that.
Yes.
Would explain why they're deaf at that point.
Oh.
Shots fired.
Yeah. Well, there's also a team called Polka Dots.
Scary, scary team.
Easy ensemble, though, hey?
True, yeah.
When I think intimidation in a sporting event, I think Polka Dots. That's exactly what I think.
Their jerseys are probably insane, though.
Bunch of polka dots.
That's right.
Look like the polka dot man.
You think it's multicolored or just like one color all the way around?
It looks like red and white.
Yeah, makes sense.
I'm thinking like yellow, green, blue, purple, red.
That's right.
Just all different kinds of colors when I see those jerseys. But just a white jersey just all over it. Make it look like a little kid just took a paintbrush with all the different colors and just splattered it all over the place and just was like, yee.
And here's one more I'll give you. This one should be a favorite for all of us at QU University, or Quincy University, sorry. St. Bonaventure Bonnies.
Ooh. Bonnies?
Bonnies.
What is it, like a reference to Bonnie and Clyde or something?
Their mascot is known as Bona Fanatic. Yeah, so far, all I can see is a picture of a wolf.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'll have to look up more on that. Yeah. That's an interesting name. There has to be some connection to it, I'd imagine. But what about you, Joe? You got anything over there for us?
I do. quick Google search, the first one that caught my eye was apparently there's a minor baseball league in New Orleans called the New Orleans Baby Cakes.
I do know what you're talking about. Yep. It is one of the most bizarre logos. I mean, I think it literally is just the baby's head with a crown on it. I think. You question me?
I think it is. Yeah.
Imagine the compliments.
Like out of a cake. It's coming out of a cake.
Absolutely.
I just want to know, it's less of where the names come from and what part of our minds is giving us these names.
I just want to see their fans. You know what I mean? Like you just got a t-shirt and like a hat that say that, like, straight repping.
I just want you guys to imagine, how would you feel if someone just you were wearing, whether it be polka dots, Deaf Leopards, or I know another favorite one is Rocket City Trash Pandas, or Baby Cakes. Like, imagine just wearing that down the street to someone who has absolutely no context to what that shirt means and trying to describe it to them. Like, how would you describe that?
I'd probably just be like, I don't worry about it. It's a sports team. Like, I don't even know. I just use that as an excuse.
Their mascot's pretty questionable, too.
You just can't leave us like that, Joe. You got to give us what that mascot is, bud.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like a baby.
It's just a giant baby with a crown on its head.
Yeah, I'm not really a big fan of the face.
They should put that on a t-shirt. The face is just walk around.
The face is the creepiest part. Like every other baby, it's a baby doll. The face is the creepiest part.
Yep.
Oh, that's terrifying. Sorry to the audio listeners. Sorry. But just look up Baby Cake Mascot.
Take your time. Trust me.
And you'll see what we mean, but it's terrifying. What, Uncanny Valley almost kind of thing. Any other good names that we got?
I'm all good.
I'll say a fascinating one again from the Prospect League, the Rockabillies. I didn't understand what that name meant until I looked up, and it's basically supposed to be relating to music. And obviously, if anyone's ever been to Tennessee, especially Nashville, it's a country music reference. And I'm like, okay, that now makes a lot more sense. So while the name is funny, it actually makes sense. Now, some names just out there, but like it is cool to see like names that are out there, but it's like, okay, it has an actual meaning to it. So I think that it's a really cool thing to kind of talk about for a little bit, just kind of to see the world of sports and just how everything can kind of, while it may seem out there and just interesting, it's actually really cool to just kind of see the story come together. And then kind of just one last thing. I know we talked about basketball a little earlier, but I want to kind of give a shout out to our women's basketball team for the progress they've made all year long with coming in a new coach in Courtney Boyd, who won an NAIA title with Clark University, and bringing in a bunch of freshmen and transfers and retaining the role players and the six-man players for the women's team last year and taking them to a spot where in the preseason rankings they were ranked 9th. They're currently ranked 8th in the conference and looking like they are poised to make the GLVC conference tournament. So I wanted to give a little shout out to them. Samira Williams, Marion Blass. I wanted to give all of them a shout out before we end up concluding here.
Absolutely. Playing good ball over there. Like, you can't be mad at it. You know what I mean? You get a bad ranking and you just got to prove them wrong at that point. So
I almost feel like that's the mantra of Quincy Athletics all around, is that we have to end up proving everybody wrong. We got to support our school, man. Like,
that's right.
We got to back them, and I think our school has done a very good job of proving the doubters wrong and proving, hey, we can be here to compete. So any last-second thoughts that you guys have right now?
Nope.
I mean, just a couple games tonight, you know what I mean? Keep an eye out as of recording this, like Thursday the 8th of February. And got a couple games tonight. I know there's a McKendree University men's basketball game, probably a women's basketball game right before that. So, and I think you said, Wes, there's a volleyball game tonight too?
Yep.
So a lot of good things to keep an eye on, you know what I mean? A lot of games.
Mm-hmm. And with that, I think that it is time to conclude the podcast. I want to say thank you all for listening to the Hawk Talk podcast here at Quincy University, part of the QU Media Podcast Network. And you can find us at qumedia.net. I've been your host, Parker Limonstall.
I've been Caleb Krager.
I've been Wes Sheeler.
I've been Joseph Del Rosario.
And once again, we want to thank you for listening. And always remember, it's a great day to be a Hawk.